case is State of Nebraska on behalf of Isaiah T. versus French. And appellant counsel may approach. And again, this is State of Nebraska on behalf of Isaiah T. versus French. And is it Mr. Lane?
Yes, it is.
All right, Mr. Lane, you may proceed with your argument.
Thank you. May it please the court, Mr. Valores. First of all, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes rebuttal.
All right. You may have to remind us of that the way we ask questions.
Okay.
All right. All right.
My name is Craig Lane. I'm the attorney for the appellate Melody Taylor, who is the mother of the child in this matter. As I've set out in my brief, we are asking the court to vacate the trial's memorandum opinion and order that was issued in September of 2021. And to award the appellant, Melanie Taylor, the primary physical care of the child, IAT, I'll go with the initials since we're strangers,
sure.
And to order Mr. French to pay the appropriate amount of child support and to permit him to have visitation if, as I'll get into later, if he no longer has guns and ammunition accessible to the child. So while I will not set out all of the facts that are contained in my brief, I believe a brief recitation of the facts are important to this case. First of all, IAT is a 13-year-old boy who presently lives with his father in Columbus, Nebraska. The father also lives with his mother, Jane French, in an apartment in Columbus since 2012, when the last decree had come out. On August 8, 2019, Melanie filed her complaint in this case alleging a change of circumstances. On June 30th, 2021, this matter proceeded to trial. On September 9th, 2021, the order came out from the Platt County judge. it's from that ruling that we've appealed. As previously mentioned, Alex and IAT reside with his mother, Jane French. It's a three-bedroom apartment. Alex testified that he has only recently, in the last 6 months, had a bed of his own at his father's house. Prior to that, he had been sleeping with his grandma in the same bed. They indicated that he was afraid to sleep on his own. Again, 13 years old. Alex works at that's the dad. He works at Godfather's Pizza. He works a split shift. And he starts off 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., then he goes back to work at 5 p.m. and works until closing, which is generally 9:30 or 10 p.m. Alex's mom, Jane French, also works outside of the home, and she works night hours as well. So on the typical night, Isaiah is home alone each and every night. Melody testified about her numerous concerns about how this is going. As recently as September of 2021, IAT called his mother and said that he was afraid. He had heard sounds in his own testimony back in chambers. He said he was freaked out. That was his terminology. That was one concern. Eventually, mom called dad, Alex, and said, you need to do something. At first, Alex just thought it was funny. Eventually, he had a coworker go out and pick up IAT and bring him to Godfather's until he got off work. Another real important problem for Melody are the guns that Alex owns and has accessible to the child. First of all, I want to say nobody's claiming that he doesn't have a right to own these guns. The argument that we have and the concern is the open accessibility of them very close to ammunition. He keeps these guns, including an AR-15, three AKM semi-automatic rifles, and an AR-10 shotgun and handgun. He keeps them normally not even in cases. He keeps them in his bedroom, which is always unlocked, doesn't even have a lock if I remember correctly. And he's got ammunition in a drawer in the same room. Again, not stored, not locked, not safeguarded.
Mr. Lane, was the presence of the guns pled as a material change of circumstance?
I don't recall, I don't think I pled them specifically in the complaint for modification, but we submitted our exhibits, which clearly talked about the guns, you know, prior to trial. But see, at the...
Well, is that just a best interest factor if you didn't plead it?
I think it is best interest. It goes to abuse of discretion, which is part of our argument, and the fact that we don't believe dad is a fit and proper parent. At the time of the original trial back in 2012, there had been testimony that he no longer had these weapons accessible to the child. So this is a change of circumstances that occurred and a significant one. The other problem is the amount of alcohol that's always in the house. We have a 13-year-old boy. We've got weapons. We've got ammunition. And dad, almost every night, according to the testimony, has alcohol in the house. They're counting on IAT to be the responsible member of this household, because dad always says it's not a big deal because he's a good kid. We agree he is a good kid, but he shouldn't be the only responsible person in this household. So the alcohol issue becomes even more of a problem. Alex even agreed, confirmed, that generally 4 to 5 nights a week he has 4 to 5 beers, and that he drinks to the point of intoxication when he's got IAT in his care.
Is this within the boy's presence or after he goes to bed?
In the boy's presence. He said as recently as a week to 3 weeks prior to the trial in this case, he had drank to the point of intoxication with Isaiah. Isaiah testified, again, I'm sorry, IAT testified back in chambers that he knows when a person's drunk and that his dad starts talking differently when he's been drinking. And so he spots it and he knows it. Melody, on the other hand, is not a drinker. She doesn't permit weapons in her house. She has lived in the same apartment, which is a, as I recall, it's a 3-bedroom apartment. She has a bedroom. She lives also with her son, who's 21 years old, and his girlfriend, who's 19. So Melody works at night as well. But again, there's no guns, there's no alcohol in the house. And secondly, when she's gone, the brother, the 21-year-old brother, he is not working now. He's going to school. So he's always there at night, him and his girlfriend, to help keep an eye and be a support person.
How many nights a week did your client, was the evidence that your client worked?
I think it's Monday through Saturday.
Nights a week?
I don't think she works on Saturday nights. I think it's Monday through Friday on the nights. I'm not positive on that.
Mr. Lane, one of the issues that the court identified in its order was the history of your client not following the order of the court, which resulted in her losing custody some years ago. But he also cited the ongoing issues of involving IAT in the case, talking, disparaging the father in the case, and not returning the child on time, things of that nature.
Yeah.
What's your argument in that regard?
Thank you for that question. Yeah, it is true that back in 2012, Melody was not turning the child back over to dad. I think, though, when you look at what happened since 2012, she's had her visitation, she's kept all of her visitation, and she has returned the child at the conclusion of each and every one of those. I think she certainly learned that lesson, that she's got to follow those court orders, and she has. I know I'm running out of time, but I believe she does that. The other thing I want to talk about real quick is, you know, we have a biracial child. We have a mom who is African-American, a dad who's Caucasian. Dad uses the N-word. He uses it. He calls his own mother profanities in front of the child. IAT had made a comment that it makes him feel uncomfortable when his dad uses this kind of language, and he prefers that he not. My last comment that I would say is, so far, Isaiah is a great kid. But if anything, if there's ever an incident, you know, the telltale danger signs are everywhere in this particular case. Guns, ammunition, alcohol, unsupervised child, and he's not involved in any activities out there. He concedes that. Alex concedes that. He has two siblings up in Sioux City along with a mother. He's got a good support system. He has no siblings out in Columbus. I think if anything, if there's ever an incident, I think we're all going to say, at least I would say, there were signs. Something could have and should have been done. And that's what we're asking the court in this case, is to overrule the district court and do something to eliminate this dangerous situation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lane. Mr. Velours.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, counsel. I represent Alex French, who's the appellee in this case. He is the father of the minor child in question. The minor child at the time of this custody modification case was 13 years old and had been residing with my client for the better part of a full decade. My client had had full legal and physical custody of his minor child. As was pointed out, that was following the result of some serious ignoring of court orders and flat out failing to abide from them. In fact, the mother of the child fled jurisdictions, did not tell the father or the court about where she was going, get permission. Alex had to engage private investigation, law enforcement in Iowa, just to find the child and get him back.
And that was several years
prior. That was several years ago, and that was why custody was changed. And so we can't forget that was the reason. Right.
But our case law tells us that we can look more importantly at what's happened in the last year or two prior to the modification trial.
But over the course of this case, we also have a 10-year, almost a 10-year time frame where the minor child is a great student. He's only been in Columbus, Columbus Public Schools. He's an AB student. He's only ever had one C. Yes, he's not involved in any activities, but that is not from a lack of trying or engaging. That is just kind of his view on things. He doesn't really want to do them. So as a father, Alex decided not to try to press him in order to do.
So let's get to the what I feel anyway is a pretty important issue, and that is the presence of the guns and maybe the combination of the guns and the alcohol that are present in the home that aren't secured in any way and an unsupervised teenager. And I understand the evidence was up until the time of trial, there'd been no problem. He showed no interest in the guns. He's a good kid. But you know, I think of the proposition in juvenile law where we don't wait for disaster to befall the child. And so, can you address those concerns in terms of the father retaining custody of this child?
Absolutely. So the father is a gun enthusiast. There's no question about that. He's not a prohibited person from having firearms.
And that's not the issue. That's his entitlement.
That's not the issue. But the fact is in the apartment, the guns are stored in his private room, away from the minor child. It's not in a common area. It's not in the kitchen. There's nothing.
However, the minor child's there three or four nights a week, and the door's not locked.
For limited hours. The minor child's own testimony was he has absolutely no interest in the guns. Mm-hmm. He does not go into that back room.
So far.
Mm-hmm. But that's what the facts are at this point. So.
But certainly you can understand the concern here of the mother about the presence of guns and ammunition that aren't secured in the home.
Of course, that could be a concern. Yeah.
Was there ever any request of the trial court to impose that kind of requirement on the father to keep the guns and ammunitions locked?
There was. I don't believe that there was actually that request made by the mother at the trial or leading up to the matter. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the evidence of the guns is, I think this is important, is because they are in his room, they are kept away from the minor child. I know it's an apartment, but they are away, and the only reason you have those images and those pictures is because the mother instructed the minor child to go into that room and hold up the camera or the phone or whatever it was mm-hmm. on screen sharing and take pictures of everything. So that was the reason why the child was in there at that time for when those guns and ammunition were, pictures were taken.
And kind of along those lines, I'm a little bothered, not so much, well, aside from the fact that there's guns, ammunition, and alcohol that would be accessible to the child if he wanted it, but that the father doesn't see any concern with that. I mean, I would think the general population would agree that's a dangerous mix. It can be. Maybe the kid will never, you know, use either of those, the alcohol or the guns. But it's certainly a concern, and it doesn't seem like the father recognizes that.
It could be a concern, but as I pointed out in my brief, just having a gun and ammunition in a house is not dangerous in and of itself. You'd have to look at almost every single kind of item in the house, whether it's prescription medication, kitchen knives in the kitchen, you know, a baseball bat or anything like that could be used in a dangerous way. We don't expect those to be locked up at every single incidents in every single house. Now, I know guns and ammunition are used for shooting, but again, the testimony of all the parties is that they were not being handled in any inappropriate way at any point. There's no evidence that has ever occurred. So this might be a different situation where there was testimony or something where the minor child had been accessing them, been playing with them or something like along those lines, but that is not the situation here. And as to the questions about drinking and alcohol, there's really no testimony as to a drinking problem. The testimony was that Alex enjoys having a couple beers a night. Opposing counsel tried to get him to state numbers and everything, but he was able to clarify that, you know, he does have sometimes up to 5 beers. But he does not drink in front of the child. The child is either asleep when that happens or under the care of his mother, who has been in the picture for the past decade as well. Most of the arguments in this case were really trying to rehash the arguments from a decade ago. Now, there was some comments by Mr. Lane about some other things about being the only responsible person. The minor child. Now, I would say that is not true. We don't have any evidence that my client has ever done anything irresponsible with the minor child, has ever done anything to affect the child's safety. As to the guns, he's taught the child about gun safety. That was in the testimony, that was in evidence. And I think importantly, Judge Steinke got to weigh the evidence and assess the credibility of everybody that testified. And in this situation, he found my client and his testimony to be the most credible here. So I think what we have is a situation where it's a bunch of what ifs. What if this could happen? What if this would happen? We don't have anything that's led into the fact that is going to happen or has happened in the past. And I think that's the important distinction here.
Mr. Valores, was there an ongoing issue with mom returning the child on time or withholding the child?
Absolutely. There's been problems with that for almost a decade. My client has worked at the same place, the same basically schedule for the past decade, and at the time of the last hearing. His mother helps with the transportation because of the distances involved. And you saw in the evidence and in the testimony and in his mother's journal log of how frequently she has issues with the child being turned back over on time, the child being unilaterally kept longer than what the order says. The statements the child would make based on after being with his mother about how he was going to be going back to live with Melanie, and those happened almost immediately after the last hearing and have continued to this day. Another important thing is when the mother does not get her way or seems to be peeved about something, her response is to call law enforcement in Columbus or DHHS to do an investigation. She admitted to doing that on multiple occasions, even while the case was pending, and there has never been one incident where that child has ever been removed for any reason. So with that, I'm almost out of time. If there's any other questions, I would be certainly happy to answer them. Otherwise, I would rest.
All right. I believe there are no more questions. Thank you, Mr. Valores. And did we leave Mr. Lane a little time?
Yes, around 15 seconds.
Oh, all right.
Not much.
Not much.
Your Honor, I guess I would just try to sum up real quickly. There was an incident recently at school where a classmate used the N-word towards IAT, and IAT reacted. There are tensions. He was told he could talk to his mom or not, so I believe that shows the dad is kind of tone deaf to some of these possible racial issues that are involved. It's a small apartment. So saying that these guns are over in a totally different place, they're a couple of steps away. IAT himself said that he has been in his dad's room before. So I'll just leave it at that since I'm out of time.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Lane.
Thank you.
The case will be taken under submission, and the parties are excused. Thank you very much for your arguments.